Going to go ahead and call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 21st, 2019. Let the record reflect, the time is 3:40 p.m. I can't necessarily follow the script perfectly because there might be a word or two off in here if I did. We'll talk about this later, young man. So today we have President Senator Michicki. We've got Senator Kawasaki and myself, Chair Schauer. Senator Coghill is still not with us due to his dad's impending funeral, and Senator Reinbold is traveling. She may call in at some point this afternoon. I'd like to go ahead and remind committee members and everybody else in the audience, please silence or turn off your cell phones. Staff assisting us today, we have Mrs. Cooper-Ryder is always on the right side, and we've got Taylor behind us with Leo. We have two items on today's agenda. The good news, it will likely be a short day for us because of some scheduling conflicts with the administration. We don't have everybody that we needed to finish or to continue working in depth on SB 34. So we're going to bring back up Senate Bill 33, arrest, release, sentencing, probation, and finish the question and answer committee members had from the previous meeting. And then we're going to continue with SB 34, probation, parole, sentences, credits, and introduce a draft committee substitute. This time we're going to go ahead and bring up Senate Bill 33, arrest, release, sentencing, probation, to finish those questions and answers about mostly ankle monitors. And we'd like to welcome from the Department of Corrections, Mrs. Winkleman, and Director for Probation, Parole, and Deputy Commissioner, Ms. Good. If you could, ladies, please go ahead and state your name and titles for the record, and we can continue with the questions you had, and then we'll open it up for committee members.
Good afternoon. I'm Jen Winkleman. I am the Director of Probation and Parole for the Department of Corrections.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kelly Good, Deputy Commissioner for Corrections.
All right. When you're ready, go ahead and proceed. I know you had some questions that you were preloaded to answer.
Yes. So to the chair, a couple questions that came up, I believe, during Tuesday's meeting that I wanted to touch on to give the committee some answers. I know there was a question regarding what we pay each day for the equipment, and we were able to essentially look at our yearly bill from the electronic monitoring equipment, because sometimes folks are going to have different pieces and parts. They may have a GPS. They may have a handheld sobrietor, and so to get an actual number or a price attached to what they are assigned to, we had to essentially do an average. So it is our equipment, no overhead, $6.75 a day, $6.75 a day.
Yeah, I'm hoping it was not $675 a day, because I'm going into that business.
Yeah. Okay. So just the equipment, essentially kind of a rental, essentially. So that was one question that had come up. The other question that had come up, and I guess kind of a statement, something for us to be looking into, and I followed up with our staff to kind of find out what happened, was in regards to when equipment is not charged, when batteries are not charged or the equipment is not plugged in. And I followed up with staff just to kind of find out what was happening with those. And essentially, for a defendant that's in pretrial status, we are filing VCORs on those, violation of conditions of release. So they're getting charged with a misdemeanor for not maintaining their equipment because they've been ordered by the court to be on the electronic monitoring for pretrial. And when they aren't able to maintain the equipment, they are now in violations of their conditions of release. So
when we say maintain equipment, just to be clear for the public record, that's primarily the batteries dying, but there could be other issues with that as well, correct?
Correct. Something, the receiver plugged in at home, or the battery on the equipment on the ankle, the transmitter. So, question. Correct to the chair.
Senator Michicki?
So is the monitoring company, whomever that may be, do you know when the battery dies, or are they just out of, if they strategically allowed their battery to die and were to go somewhere else, you would never know about it. You have to catch them on a random if the battery is not charged or serviced?
So through the chair to Senator Michicki, the battery, when it's starting to go low, is going to send alerts to both the probation officer and the defendant that it needs to be charged. So there's a warning process through it. And then if it is to die, then the probation officer will respond to that to the residents and will either be a violation of release at that point or to determine whether or not the equipment is, you know, from time to time it's equipment and there may be a malfunction that wasn't, you know, accounted for. But
okay. Thank you.
Senator Kawasaki?
Thank you. Going back to the charge per unit, $675 was like an average. Is that the how did you arrive at that cost?
So through the chair to Senator Kawasaki, what we did was we took pretrial has only been in effect for a year. So we took our year's worth of data of what the electronic monitoring company charges us for the equipment, and broke it down by the average daily cost and then the average number of defendants that are on the program. If you were to look at the actual bill of the different types of equipment, it's going to range anywhere from $3 to $8, depending on what a defendant has. And it really just depends on where they're at, circumstances surrounding their arrest, whether or not a sobriety is necessary or alcohol monitoring is necessary. If there is no nexus to an alcohol condition, they may just be ordered on some sort of curfew, and then their equipment is going to be different than somebody that would be ordered on an alcohol monitoring. And then the other question that had come up was about the best monitors out there, and I believe Deputy Commissioner Good will speak to maybe how many manufacturers are out there. But essentially, I kind of reviewed a list, essentially, of what things we look for, and just to give the committee kind of an idea, we're looking for something that must attach to the ankle. We're looking for a company or equipment that's going to immediately notify of a tamper attempt or a removal. We need to make sure it's sealed and shock resistant. So there's a various list of things that we're going to be looking for through the companies that are out there, the manufacturers that are out there, to determine what is going to be the best monitor. I know that question's come up several times about what the best monitor is out there. We also have logistics of Alaska, essentially. You know, we have rural communities. Certain equipment will work in certain areas. And I wish I could speak to the committee exactly on what, but I know that at different times right now we have had difficulty with our equipment working out in Bethel. There's one type of equipment that will work in Barrow. So we have to take that all into consideration when we're going into contract with regard to these electronic monitoring companies. Those were the three questions that I had specifically.
Copy, that one's still to be determined.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to follow up with Jen, in general, we find that there's about four or five manufacturing companies. They're going to do different types of EM monitors. We'll get into those. If you really want to know more information about each company, we can have our folks look into it. But in the two quick days, it's a small number of companies out there manufacturing this type of products.
Okay. I mean, at least for the purpose of this committee, not a big deal. I think the biggest thing will drive costs later, and are we getting what we need? That's really the big question.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Now, just as we move forward on this, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd certainly like to have some. So our job is not to manage what you do. Our job is to sort of understand, make laws, and then appropriate so that you can do your job, right? But I'm curious if there's a pretty clear-cut spec for monitoring equipment. Is it if I still strongly believe that this should be a private sector thing? But there's one in my district. I hear from him regularly. He's watching. I'm sure he's watching right now. But with a clear cut, with a clear spec and some expectations, in order for them to be able to provide what you need as we go forward with this, is that something that we have? Is it obvious for a private sector provider what would be needed to be able to meet your requirements? Or would you say that some of these folks just sort of got into business and it wasn't clear how often they'd have to upgrade, what was expected of the equipment, that kind of thing?
You want me?
Oh, go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. So the committee actually asked me to reach out to a couple providers, which I did. And I have not heard that at all. They have been, the dealings that they've had with the state to this point, there has been no complaints about that type of an issue. So I'm fairly confident that we're okay in that area. And actually, that's a great intro into the last question that the committee asked me to find out. Are they in a position to be up and running? Is ramp up reasonable? And I will tell you that they all feel, it will take a little time, but they're all, you know, the ones that are still in operation today, they feel like over a little bit of time they can ramp up and meet the needs should the should this go forward into in a contract for private companies to join in this area. So okay. They were all very positive.
Copy. Any other thoughts? Any other questions for them? Because I'm not going to slow down the thing on 33 at the moment. We don't need to. So that was it. We'll be taking that up at a later time. Okay. Thank you, ladies. All right, we're going to go ahead and take up the second item on the agenda tonight, Senate Bill 34, sponsored by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. This is the fifth hearing on the Senate Bill 34 so far, first heard on February 7th. And public testimony has been heard and concluded. We do have a proposed committee substitute. This document was distributed yesterday. It's posted under this bill's documents tab on basis. Substitute contains a series of technical changes our legislative legal services department requested. Substitute also contains a draft amendment from the Department of Law. Because of those changes, we're going to discuss those here openly in public to make sure we get that on the record and that everybody's comfortable with what we have that was added. So for the committee members, it is my intent at this point to adopt the committee substitute as our working draft. We will have the drafter from Legal Services and the Department of Law explain what we have and then to answer any questions today. Then we'll let this document rest over the weekend. It is my intent to bring this committee substitute back up next Tuesday for further explanation and discussion and give your offices time to craft any amendments you would like to propose to this version. At this time for the committee, we're going to go ahead and take up amendments next Thursday will be the intent, and then take possible final action if we're happy with where we are or continue to work on the bill. For scheduling purposes, if you want any amendments, I ask that you would get those into our office by 5 p.m. next Wednesday. We'll be able to post those online and get those to the department for review, which will ensure we're all deliberating with the same materials. With that, we have a committee substitute before us. I would entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
Mr. Chairman.
There I go again. Senator Machicki.
I move that the committee adopt work order 31-GS1031/M as our working document.
I will object for the purposes of discussion. Currently online, we have, I believe she's online, let me make sure. We have Claire Radford from Legislative Legal Services online to answer any questions regarding technical changes. In the room, we have Casey Schroeder from the Department of Law, who will explain the draft changes. She's welcome to come on up to the table. We also have Jeff Edwards from the Department of Corrections, who can speak to any of the changes in the draft amendment as they relate to the Department of Corrections. Mr. Schroeder, if you just go ahead for the record, put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. The draft CS before you contains a number of changes that were requested on behalf of the Department of Corrections by the Department of Law. And I'll just run through them quickly here. There's not many of them. The first one is on page 7. It starts on page at the bottom of page 6, but the substantive part of it is on page 7, and that would be sections 9 and 10. Those sections are amending the same statute, and they work together. So there are two things happening here. First, for discretionary parole eligibility, we're returning that back to where it was pre-SB 91. Then we're also moving some of that language up to subsection A, which is what you see on lines 3 through 7. That would be new capital D there, that new language. That is language that prohibits certain offenders from being eligible for discretionary parole. Before SB 91 and after SB 91, that prohibition was located in subsection B, which is in section 10. And that, so what we're doing, though, is just moving that up to subsection A, which is where all of the prohibitions are. So that all of the prohibitions will be located in the same spot. So we're just reorganizing the statute a little bit in that way. The other thing that we're doing is on page 7, lines 8 through 11. We are adding clarifying language that if a prisoner is not eligible for good time deduction from their sentence, They are also not eligible for discretionary parole. And the prisoners that are generally not eligible for a good time deduction that is specifically cited in this language are your repeat sex offenders or your unclassified and Class A sex offenders. The next set of changes occurs on page 10 of the CS. So sections 13 and 14, also amending the same statute and working together. All these changes do is revert that language back to where it was before SB 91. The language that was in the underlying bill was a partial reversion back to before SB 91, and this would just go fully back to the language that was there before SB 91. And it basically just removes some timelines that were enacted by SB 91. The other thing that's happening on page 10, which you won't be able to see because we are removing an entire section that is in the underlying bill. That section talked about requiring people to be on parole for at least 1 year. We want that to remain in statute, so we are no longer going to amend that section of law, so it is removed from the bill. Corresponding to that, on page 10, lines 18, we are adding back into law the language that the person has to have completed 1 year on parole before they're eligible for early termination. The underlying bill deleted that language. We are returning it back into statute. And the next and final change is on page 11, and that would be section 17. So we're adding back in some of the language that was deleted in the underlying bill, and that would give the parole board authority to toll when somebody is in violation status. So if they violated their parole, the board would have the ability to stop the clock, and so that their parole time would not continue to run while they were in violation status. So that we're adding language there to allow the board to do that. That is consistent with how probation is done, and this just adds statutory authority for the parole board to do the same thing. And those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All right, thanks, Casey. Go ahead. We have questions from the committee on this now, because I want to be crystal clear again that we have added some things that were not originally there. So we have our expert in front of us and those in the room and online. So if you have questions about these changes that were added, I want to make sure we get those cleared up now before we adopt this and move forward. So
I have a couple of quick ones.
Senator Machicki, as you need to, go ahead.
Did we also make changes on page 14 with the in section 22? Those are just conforming changes with the earlier changes that you talked about before?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, section 22 is the repealer section. The only change that we requested in that section was to remove a statute that was originally in there to be repealed. We did not want to repeal that. That was an error. And then we added 3316090B2, and that is because of the first change I talked about on page 7. Basically, what we're doing there on page 7, lines 21 through 25, is we're lifting that language, returning it to be pre-SB 91, and putting it above in subsection A. So it's the new D language there. Okay. So it's really kind of a drafting thing. So basically, B2 is repealed. So if members want to put brackets around it in the text of the bill, it's easier to read that way.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up. These charts I use every day, can you update them as well, please? And
yep.
Perhaps repost them or provide them for the chair and committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, you know, through the chair. We can do that, yes.
Yep. Other questions there?
Yeah.
Senator Kawasaki. And do we have anybody else that would like to comment on the time as far as the technical changes or conforming and the amendments? So we've got, just while we have them, Claire, is there anything you want to add?
Yes, I would like to note that Section 7 was added to update the cross-reference as a result of the renumbering in Section 6.
Do you mind just walking us through that cross-reference so I can see it for myself here as I'm now staring at it?
Yes. On page 4 in Section 6, A is being amended, and that is AS3305040A, and the numbering changes with the repeal of number 4. So number 5, perform duties with respect to persons on parole, that section will now be the new number 4. So with that numbering change, Section 7 was added since A5 was cross-referenced in 3305040B. So that number has just been changed to reflect that that is now A4.
Okay, I'm tracking that. I was good with that. Okay, copy that. Anything else, Claire?
I believe that's all.
Thank you. And Mr. Edwards, do you have anything from your perspective you want to add at this time, make sure we get everything cleared up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, nothing at this time.
Thank you. Okay. Seeing no further questions, like I said, my intent at this time is to adopt this as our working draft, and any members who wish to amend this bill propose amendments under this version. The committee will further discuss this bill next Tuesday and give members a chance to think of any amendments you might have. Amendments will be due by next Wednesday at 5, as I mentioned before, and we'll take up amendments on Thursday. With that, I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection. Is there a further objection to adopting the committee substitute as our working document? Good. Seeing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 34, version M, is adopted as the working document. With that, the committee will set Senate Bill 34 aside. Like I promised, it would be a nice short day, unfortunately, because I wish we could get more work done on it, but we didn't have the right folks here. That concludes our business for today. Senate State Affairs Committee will be meeting again Tuesday, February 26, 2019, at 3:30 p.m. in the Butrovich Committee Room to go over Senate Bill 34, Probation, Parole, Sentences, and Credits. We'll be getting an in-depth sectional analysis of that bill and try to dig down to get into the weeds on that one. Seeing no other business before the committee, correct? Just thumbs up. We will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 3:58 p.m.